awesome.
It's all right. Ryan, I'm an alcoholic. I told Stan to get Buddy to do it, but he called. No, I said Buddy. But here I am. So I got sober November 24th of 2002. This is my home group. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. And I guess this is better. I don't have like a couple hours to think, or a month, or 2 months to think about what I'm going to save people. So, you know, I can maybe just set it aside and see what happens. But I guess just for me, what happened is I was a little kid, and I related to what Wei was talking about. You know, I really did. And for me, growing up as a kid, I was just weird. You know, I was a neurotic, crying little kid. You know, when I was three, my parents got divorced, and they separated. And I remember being like, well, my mom, when I'm not with my mom, I would cry because I'd miss my mom. When I was not with my dad, I'd cry because I'd miss my dad. And that's cool when you're three. You know, but like as you're getting older, 10, 11, 12, it's starting to be weird, you know? And so that was the way I was. I had a lot of like imaginary friends when I was a kid, and it was just easier, you know? Like they didn't judge, they didn't say anything weird about me, and so I didn't have to worry about it. But what happened is when I was about seven, I went to Miami, and my dad's got three sisters, and they all have kids, and all their kids are 5, 6 years older than me. So the youngest one closest to me is like 13 years old. And, you know, he was cool, you know, he could break dance, and, he had a skateboard, and his girlfriend was there, you know, and I just looked up to him, and going into this, I was attracted to doing things I wasn't supposed to do, and again, like, I got those weird things with my family, like, I don't want to upset them ever, so I would do things, like, that I knew I wasn't supposed to do, and then once I get caught, I'd be, like, really freaked out, you know, and I'd start crying, you know what I mean, because that's just kind of how I dealt with everything. And then what had happened was I was in Miami, right? So I'm a weird kid, out of place, don't know what's going on. And my cousin lays down on the floor under a keg and puts the tap in his mouth and starts drinking out of it. And I don't know why he laid down on the ground, you know. I just figured that was standard procedure for drinking, you know. So I was ready to do whatever he wanted me to do. So I laid down on the ground too, and I put the tap in my mouth. And I remember I started drinking from it. I was like, oh, man, that tastes bad. And I stood up. And I got, like, I just felt that, like, you know, when you stand up a little quick and you get dizzy. And it was like that times 10. And I fell in love with it. It hit the bottom of my stomach. It shot to my fingertips. I wasn't all of a sudden 8 or 9 or 10 years old. You know what I mean? I didn't have a skateboard or a girlfriend. I wasn't by any means cool. You know, I may have cried. I don't know. But I didn't care what anybody else thought about me. And I don't know about anybody else, but alcohol did that to me the last time I drank in October of 2002. And alcohol never stopped working for me. You know, the problem for me was all this other stuff continued to happen, and I can't control my drinking. You know, but it did that for me every time I drank. And I'm 7 years old, and I have that first thing, and I stand up, and it hits my fingertips and shoots back into my stomach, and I'm smiling, and I don't care anymore. And the second thought I remember is if I stop right now, this feeling is going to go away. You know, and I remember that distinctly, and I don't remember much else from that night, but I remember that distinctly, and so I laid back down on the ground, I guess, and I put the tap back in my mouth, and I continued drinking, you know, and I don't know how many times you have to do that to black out when you're seven and you're my size at the time, you know, it was quick, you know, my mom tells me I threw up on her shoes, I passed out, and I went to bed, and I woke up with a firm resolution to do that as much as I could whenever I got an opportunity, because it was amazing, you know, it really was. I was the type of kid that I would, my friends, my neighbors, their parents would leave, and I would raid their liquor cabinet. And they would do it, too, with me. It was like, I kind of feel like they were co-signing. Like, they would jump in, and they would start drinking, too. And they would do it, like, they'd take, like, a shot of whiskey or a shot of tequila, and they'd be like, oh, it tastes bad. And then they'd go play basketball or watch dirty movies or jump in the canal or something like that, you know. And I'm still in the liquor cabinet. Because I knew if I stopped, it was worse than starting. You know what I mean? Like, once I started, I had to keep going. So I'm walking around my neighborhood drunk, a couple years old. And I forgot to tell you, too, when I was a kid, I went to a school because my dad asked me where I wanted to go. And I said, I want to go over to Reno to send me to. And so they're like, so Reno goes to an all-Catholic school. So I go to this Catholic school and come to find out I'm the only Jewish kid there, you know. So that's just odd, too. You know, it's just weird and different. But for me, I have a problem with perception. I have a problem with, you know what I mean, figuring things out. A kid when I was in seventh grade came, he was Jewish also. you know, I made fun of them, you know, like I didn't like befriend them because I was a martyr, you know what I mean? Like I know what you're going to go through. It's going to be really hard with all these Catholics here, and you know what I mean? And we're the only Jews. We'll hang together. You know, it wasn't like that at all. I made fun of them, you know what I mean? And I just alienated him. And that's the way I do things. I do whatever I can to make me feel better on the inside. And, you know, little by little, I obviously, when I was a freshman in high school, I was about 4'10". I weighed like 90 pounds. It was hard to get booze. You know, it really was. I couldn't walk up to the nearest liquor store and buy any beer. And if I found one where you could, I just ran that place out. You know, we would go there all the time after school. And, you know, when you see a couple of kids like they're 9 coming out with a handful of beer, you know, they shut them down quick. And so we shut down a few places that would serve beer to liquor or to minors, you know what I mean, in my high school years. And but I remember I was, you know, as I got older, I ended up growing, which was good. And I started to look at least a little bit older. I don't know if, you know, maybe not. I don't know. Like I felt more older. And when I was a junior in high school, we would have Gasparilla parties at my mom's house. My mom lives like walking distance from the Gasparilla Day Parade. And my mom would go to work because my mom was, you know, trying to, you know, single mom, help, you know, I mean, raise me and all that stuff. And so she would go to work on a Saturday for her job. And I would tell her, I'd say, okay, you're good that you're going to work because I'm having a big party, you know. And so I would have, you know, a couple hundred people, a couple hundred of my closest friends over this house. And I would tell like 20 people and then everybody else would come, you know, and that's just kind of how it went. But I remember I had a water bottle full of tequila because you can't carry tequila when you look like you're 12 on Bayshore at 9 in the morning. And it just doesn't look right. And so I had this water bottle full of tequila, clear tequila, and I took a little sip, and this guy from another high school, is a big football player guy, he asked me what I was drinking. I told him it was tequila. He said, let me have a sip. And so he took a sip, and he scrunched, and he made these faces, and he choked, and his eyes watered. And so I said, give me that. And I grabbed it. I put like 3 just big pulls on it. And he was like, that's pretty amazing, you know. And I'd found it, you know what I mean? Like, I ran track and cross country in high school, and I wasn't very good at it, you know. And I played basketball growing up with my neighbors, and I never grew, so I wasn't very good at it, you know. And but when I drank, man, I really felt like I was good at that. And I was not, you know what I mean? But I was really good. I could drink a lot. And I thought that meant like I could drink a lot. But really what that meant was I had no choice but to drink a lot, you know? Because what would happen is those days, every time it would happen, I would just continue. And it would happen until I would pass out almost every single night. And when I was a senior in high school, I got into a college like my first month. You know, I was like, it was October. School started like, you know, beginning of September. So it was early October. I got accepted to college, and I was like, cool. And I got nothing else to do here. And it was basically just going to come to school every day and get loaded. And so I proceeded to do just that. You know, every morning I would fill up a water bottle full of vodka, and I would take it to school with me, and I'd be drunk in, you know, freshman class. I mean, in my first period class. And if you'd asked me at the time, I would have told you with all honesty that when I get to college, I'm going to change and grow up and all that stuff. You know, I really, really wanted to, and I really thought I would, but I did not, you know, I really didn't. I applied to one college. It was the number one party school in the nation that year, and, you know, rated in Playboy magazine, which is, you know, good research, and so I applied, you know, and I went there, and they let me in. Really what happened, too, is my junior year, I went, and I partied with, like, my best friend's older sister at her sorority house. And so I just figured that's what college was going to be like for me. It's like partying with a bunch of, you know, girls in the sorority. And, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just in, you know? So I was like, this is, you know, this place is miraculous. You know, I love it. And, you know, that wasn't it either for me. I got in, and I drove up. And it was funny. I drove up with my mom and my dad and my stepmom. And we 4-hour trip to Tallahassee. And we don't do that very often together. You know, it's an intense ride, to say the least. It's not the most fun ride, you know? It's just awkward. And it's like somebody's going to say something weird in a minute. You know, it's just going to be bad. And we got there, and I tell you, I've always wanted to be like my dad. You know, he's a brilliant guy. He's a hard worker. He got in trouble in high school, and he turned his life around on his own accord after his mom passed away, and he just did well with everything, you know. I was unable to even try, you know, because that night when he said, you know what I mean, good job, have fun in college, make me proud, I was like, I'm going to. I'm going to be a good student, man, you know what I mean, all these things. And he walked down the corner. He turned right, and I went out the back, down the steps, found Seminole Discount Beverage, which would sell me booze, and I started to drink, you know. And if you'd asked me the time again, I'd say, well, it's Friday, class doesn't start till Monday, I'll stop drinking on Monday, you know, or I'll drink on the weekends or party, like, you know, normal freshmen in college do. And I was a daily drunk, you know. And to be honest with you, I was a daily drunk basically from the time I got into that college, my end of my senior year, I was about 17, until I got sober. And I had no chance of stopping. And the New Year's Eve 2000, my uncle that had the keg in his garage that I was laying on the floor to drink out of it, he's a heavy drinker, and every year from New Year's till Super Bowl, thanks Tiffany, she knows it, he just stops drinking. He drinks water, and he like loses weight, and he starts to look better, and he starts to feel better, and he just parties like an animal for the next 11 months of the year. You know what I mean? That's pretty much his deal. And I was like, that's cool. I want to be like Uncle Chuck, you know. And so I tried to do the same thing, and I went 4 days, and I was like, good enough for me, and I stopped drinking, and that was I started drinking again, and that was the sober breath I took from my senior in high school till I found y'all, and. I'd love to say that was it, but it got worse. I failed out of that college pretty quick. They don't want you to come back when you sign up for a bunch of classes and then you don't ever show up for them. And nor do they give you good grades when you do that. I don't know why. I don't know. It's weird. But I took golf class. I failed golf. With golf, all you have to do, if anybody's never taken, is to go to the driving range and hit golf balls. And you could bring beer with you and you could pass. And I got 98 on the midterm, you know. And so I got 98 on the midterm. I got an F in the class because I didn't show up for the final and for golf. And, you know, I went back to college sober, and I looked at my transcripts, and I was like, that's just amazing. You know what I mean? Like, I would make fun of anybody else that did that, but it's me. So what am I going to say? And so I did that, and then they asked me not to come back, obviously, and I moved back to Tampa. And I talked to my parents, and they said, what's wrong with you? I said, well, you know, I party a little too hard, and, you know, I probably need a little you know, regiment in my life, a little bit of structure, maybe some help. You know, with money, obviously. I don't really need any other help, you know. And they said, all right, well, we'll give you a little security deposit on a house on Davis Island, and we'll check in on you. And you get a job, pay your own bills, go back to college. You know what I mean, we'll pay tuition, but that's it. And I was like, okay, it seems fair. You know, like I just wasted a bunch of money in Tallahassee, but you know what I mean, like I felt like they're doing all right by me at that point. You know, I'm self-centered to the extreme. And what happened is I moved in this little house on Davis Island. It's funny, a couple of the guys in the group here live like two doors down from it now, and I hit bottom there. And what happened is obviously everyone here has been to Davis Island. It's the two pizza places, the 7-Eleven, a couple bars that aren't that, and I got a job delivering pizza at one of the pizza joints, and I lived directly behind that 7-Eleven, and I would have to work at 4, so I'd get up at 3, and I would get a 12-pack of beer, and I'd put it on ice in the back seat of my car, and I would go to my pizza delivery job. And I'd get down 2 beers, you know, and that was good. Like I could move, I could be all, I was all right, you know what I mean? I wasn't like feeling real sick, and that helped. And then I would drink the other 10 throughout my shift of work. And somewhere along the way, I'd gotten a small TV that you could plug into your cigarette adapter in your car. So I'm drinking, I'm driving, I'm delivering pizza, and I'm watching TV. You know, the first time it was to see football or something like that. And then it was like, and it wasn't like I pulled in a lot of channels. I had one. It was like you had a bunny ear, like a long one that'd be like sticking out my window as I'm driving around, and you know, it's just bad. But they didn't really care. You know, they paid me in cash every night, and I'd use all that cash and I'd put it right back into that bar that they owned. You know, I would wait for it to get a little bit busy, and I would have a couple drinks lined up in front of me. Once it'd get busy, I'd say, "Oh, you work here? Go make your own." And it's like awesome for an alcoholic, you know, because I got beers in my pockets. I got a glass like this big with just whiskey and ice in it, you know, and I had one. I mean, I had a thing of Crown and a beer, I would tell them, or something like that. You know, I got like 6 beers in my pockets, and so I'm just robbing them, you know, and I'm walking around Davis Island, and I'm drinking every night, you know, and I'm going to bed with the spins, and I'm going to bed vomiting, you know what I mean, for no reason. Well, like for one reason, you know. So. But no matter how much I didn't want to vomit, it still was going to happen. So I was doing that, and I would wake up in the morning, and it would feel like my heart wouldn't start right. Like, I heard somebody talk about, like, motor oil going through it and, like, starting to beat, and I kind of felt like that, you know? And it was just, like, really, like, painful waking up stuff. And then and I would be sick, and the only way I could not be sick was to drink more. And that was my life, you know? You know, at the end there, at 2:55, I'd make the run to the 7-Eleven to stock up on beer to last me through the rest of the night. So, at, you know, 2:55, I'm there, and then at 7 a.m., I'm back there again. I'm waiting outside, and people are going to work, and I'm judging them, you know, because I can't be like them. I'm not going to be going to work at 7, getting my paper at the 7-Eleven, you know what I mean? I'm outside sitting on the curb waiting for them to start selling beer again so I can get the last couple to make me pass out, you know what I mean? It's back up at 3. Get that 12-pack, turn on the TV, you know, prime it to some channel that I'm going to watch when I'm driving on delivering pizza. And, you know, bad things started to happen. Like, I would, I would come out of blackouts driving my car, you know, and I'm not, I don't want to drink and drive. I really don't, you know, like, I just do, you know, like, there's no, like, idea behind, like, when I come out of a blackout and I'm driving, you know, I didn't really necessarily want to get in the car. Maybe I did. I don't remember. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? I guess that's what a blackout is. And, you know, I said I didn't want to do it. And, you know, but I would wake up and I would try to open my driver's side door and I'd be like, what's wrong with my door? And I'd look and it'd be red. It might have a white car, you know, and I'm like, that's bad, you know. And I vaguely remember not being able to open my driver's side door the night before and just going out the passenger and then falling asleep in my front yard or something to that effect. You know, like, that's basically what I didn't have any worry about at that point. And the next morning it would be, I'd see it and I'd retrace my steps just with that gut feeling I did something bad. You know what I mean? This could be really, really bad. And then I would see a parked car with a big streak of white down the side of it, and I'd say, okay, it's not that bad. It was parked. You know, like, nobody's gone anywhere yet. It's good. And then I would go home, and I would call the police, and I'd say, somebody hit my car while it was parked in front of my house last night. You know, and that's not good. You know what I mean? Like, that's fraud. So I would do stuff like that. And I had one friend that lived next door to me, and this guy was, like, long dreadlocks, hippie guy. He would all he'd do is smoke weed and worked his two jobs and went to college. And he was doing some weird stuff. But I really couldn't let him know how much I was drinking. And that's where it had gotten. The only way I would ever say anything was, you know what I mean, like, again, when I'd be asleep in my front yard and my neighbors would be looking at me, and here's my neighbor, so he would know something was wrong with Ryan last night. You know what I mean? Because it's August and I'm asleep face down in my front yard. You know, say the least, that's hot, you know, I'm sweating and I'm hungover. I'm very dehydrated, and it just hurts, you know. So that was basically my life, you know. I can't even tell you all the other stuff that was going on. Yeah, it was just because there wasn't any other outside circumstances. My mom was dying, you know, because of me. You know, she just worried about me. And my dad, you know what I mean, the night I told him that I couldn't stop drinking, he just was, you know what I mean, he was just beside himself. And they didn't know what to do with me, and I had no care. Yeah, I didn't care. Like, I got to do what I got to do. I'm wrecking their lives. I have no friends left, you know, and I'm just dying. And I don't even know, you know, because I'm 21 years old. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm drinking like every other 21-year-old does. That's not true. And I think I'd be pretty, like, I had some serious blinders on to think that, because I was drinking with an old homeless guy on Davis Island. And me and him drank alike, you know. I related to him. And he told me once that he found a houseboat. And I said, that's great, you get a good deal on it. He goes, no, I found it. It was beached. I moved in. And I thought to myself, when I'm homeless, I hope I find a houseboat because I'm going to need somewhere to stay too, you know. And all that seemed normal to me, you know. And I'm just dying. And what happened is I was supposed to go back to college. And funny thing was is I woke up at 9. I was going to go to class at 9. You know what I mean? It's just crazy. I don't like doing that now. You know what I mean? I'm sober a couple of years. And you know what I mean? At the time, I was like, I woke up. I was really hungover. I'd been asleep a couple of hours. I was probably a little still drunk. And I drove out to the school, and there was a boot on somebody's car. And class had just opened that morning, and there's already a boot. That's crazy. You know what I mean? That's really, really strict parking regulation. So I drove home and got drunk and went back to bed, you know? And I never went back, you know? And nor did I withdraw from any of those classes either, so I failed those. It was too much for me. It was too much to be like anybody else. So, obviously, I'd failed out of college, and my parents would call me and be like, how's school? I'd be like, oh, English is great. They said, well, you thought you were taking history. I said, well, I'm taking history and English. You know, by the time I get sober, I'm taking like 11 classes, you know, in college, because I've told them so many lies. I don't even try and keep track of them anymore. I told them I was going to charge my books on his credit card, and I just never went to the school. So, I mean, they find stuff out like that. Like, when they don't have, you know what I mean, $600 on their credit card, they're like, what happened to your books? You know, I'm like, well, funny thing is, I haven't been to school in a while. I'd wanted to tell him I couldn't stop drinking for a while. And like I said, my dad's a doctor, so I figured he'd know what to do with me. And I went over to his house, or I call him or something like that, every night for 30 days about, right before I got sober, with like all intents to tell him, I can't stop drinking, I need help. And every night I would start to get a little shaky, and I would think, tomorrow's a better night to quit drinking, you know? And it really was. You know what I mean? At the time, it really seemed like it was a better night to quit drinking. So I went like that for a little bit, and, you know what I mean, just a series of coincidences, getting in trouble, and they said, what's wrong with you? I said, I can't stop drinking. You know what I mean? And I was like, I'm doing a lot of drugs. You know what I mean? That was true at the time. And so I told him that, and my stepmom's like, we're going to drug test you. I said, yeah, I'll just tell you what's on them. You know what I mean? Like, it's easy. Let's just bypass all that. And I don't know. I need help. And I remember my dad said, okay, let's go get a toothbrush and some stuff from your place. And my house was a wreck. You know, it was it'd come back to life because I'd left dishes in the sink so long. And that happens. You know, bugs live in them. You know what I mean? And they start flying around your house. And so you open the door and try and shoo all the bugs out and throw out all your silverware, or that's what I do. So I'm eating off paper plates and pizza boxes, and there's mold everywhere, and it's really bad. And there's beer bottles everywhere. You mean I smoke in the house, there's cigarette butts on the ground, and you know, it's just disgusting. And my dad walks in, I open the door, and he looks, and all he can see is like a straight line straight ahead to a wall with like dirt and, you know, disgust all in front of him. He goes, get your toothbrush and meet me out of here, you know, and that was it. So I grabbed my toothbrush and I walked out, and I was, you know what I mean, I didn't have any clean clothes. So he's like, just leave your clothes, you know what I mean, you have something to mind for the evening. And I went back to their house, and he slept on the ground next to my bed with his head against the door so I couldn't escape. And he turned the motion detectors on in the house in case I'd gotten by him while he was asleep, the alarm would go off. And he said to me, if you really need a drink, let me know, we'll have a drink together. And by about 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm shaking pretty violently. I'm real sick. I'm going to bed for 20 minutes. I'm waking up like I just gotten out of a cold shower. The sweats were so bad, and you know, it wasn't going well. And I woke him up. I said, "Hey man, how about that drink?" He goes, "Why don't you just try and go to bed? Turn off the TV." You know, I'm like, "Damn it!" You know, foiled again. So I went to bed. I slept like a half hour, 45 minutes. My parents wouldn't leave me at their house by myself for obvious reasons, because I would have just taken everything and ran, and they knew that. It was the one thing they definitely knew about me at that point. So my stepmom took me to work with her, and I've worked with my stepmom every summer since I was about 8 or 9 years old. I'm 21, so I know everybody she works with. And they're like, Ryan, how's college? I mean, I'm like, it's good. You know, I failed out again. You know, how are you doing? I'm great. I'm detoxing off of booze. You know what I mean? And I'm green. And I weigh like 60 pounds over what I normally weigh, and it's all my cheeks and my neck and my gut, and everything else is built the exact same as I am right now. And it was all beer. You know what I mean? It was all beer and whiskey and the pizza that I would eat at the pizza place, you know? And that was my diet. So I walk in, and I look up something on the internet, and it's one of those 44 questions things, and I start answering it. And I answer them all yes. Except for, like, would you ever lose a spouse due to your drinking? And the story of my life at the end of my drinking is I'm 21 years old. I might get a girl to go on a date with me. And if she goes on a date with me, I don't want to drink, but I drink anyways because I have no choice. And I start drinking, and I'm not, like, crazy. I'm just a drunk. You know, so I start saying weird things, you know what I mean, like during dinner. And I start slurring my words, and I'm knocking stuff over. And so they would use the restroom and never come back to dinner. So long story short, I'm not getting married, you know, so that's not going to happen. So that's the way my life is going. And I answer all these yes, and it says, if you answer more than 4 or 5 yes, you're probably an alcoholic. I'm like, 4 or 5? You know what I mean? Like, I think anybody I know would fail this. You know what I mean? Of course, I'm hanging out in like a dive bar, about, you know what I mean, with a couple guys that drink the same as me. Of course, they're going to fail it. But I just think that everybody drinks like I do. Everybody drinks like when it hits your stomach, you can't stop anymore because I have the phenomenon of craving. I thought everybody just, you know what I mean, had better willpower, were not as lazy, you know what I mean, hit it better, you know, like stuff like that. But that's not the case. I'm actually physically different when it comes to my relationship with alcohol. And not only that, I got this spiritual illness that no matter how long it's been since I drank, if I have no program of action or something that's going to find me a higher power of my own understanding, it's going to restore me to sanity, I'm going to drink again. You may have no choice. You know, there's nothing. You mean, if I stop doing this stuff today, I have the same choice as I did then, and that's none. You know, it's going to happen. So that's what I was dealing with at the time. And I went to rehab, and I loved my rehab. You know what I mean? Like, my rehab is nice. You know what I mean? Like, I go back there now, and I take a meeting on Friday nights, and I go to other places, and I'm like, my rehab was nice. I didn't know anything about it at the time. I'd never seen a rehab or knew what they were about or anything like that. But I walked around in sweatpants and a sweatshirt every day, you know, and I had to go to the little group things, and they wanted me to meditate, and that was hard, you know, because, you know, I'm detoxing off booze, you know what I mean? Like, I'm self-centered to the extreme as well, you know what I mean? So I got to forget about that. Like, I'm that self-centered. It's like, it's going to kill me. It's like, sit down and think for an hour. It's like, no, that's exactly what I don't want to do. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to drive myself up the wall, you know? I think it's great now, but, you know, I mean, you know, 6 days sober in rehab, it's not easy, you know? So that's what I'm dealing with. And uh, you know, I'd met a guy in rehab that was my roommate. He was like 6 days ahead of me, so I figured he really knew his way around AA, you know. He knew everything about rehab, that was for sure. And he knew which group you brought your pillow to so you could sleep. He knew that you never sleep through breakfast because breakfast was awesome, and it really was. And, you know, and he just had, you know, he knew the ropes. And he was normal in every respect of his life except for his relationship with alcohol. And his relationship with alcohol manifested itself like this. He was a drug addict, and he said he was only a drug addict, you know. And he said, I can drink safely with my girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like that cry of, you know what I mean, of the alcoholic. You know what I mean? My case is different. I'm not like y'all. You know what I mean? I can drink safely. I promise you. You know what I mean? And this guy got out of rehab, and I saw him on a Wednesday night for aftercare, and, you know, he said, I'm going to have a glass of wine with my girlfriend tonight. I can drink safely. My case is different than y'all. And he asked me what I was doing. I said, I'm going to 7 meetings a week, which wasn't true. I'd gotten out of rehab, and I would drive to the meeting, and I would see the meeting, and then I'd see everybody talking, and I can't do that. You know what I mean? I'd drive around, I'd go smoke somewhere. You know, I'd just sit there and smoke cigarettes, and I'd go home, I'd tell my parents the meeting was great. You know what I mean? They talked about this, this, and this. You know, I have no idea. I don't even know what they talk about, really. And needless to say, that guy had a glass of wine with his girlfriend that night. He started doing whatever he was doing. He died. And, you know, I had known from rehab. They took us to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they took me to a meeting one night, and I heard a guy share. He was speaking just like I am tonight. And he said, he talked about alcohol in a way that I related to. You know what I mean? He talked about what happened to him with alcohol. And he was sober like 19 years at that point. And he was the first person I could really honestly believe knew what I was talking about. I'd seen therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists since the time I was 3 years old and I started crying when my parents got divorced. And now I'm in high school, I'm an insomniac. You know what I mean? And these people could never, ever help me because they didn't know what I was talking about, because I wouldn't tell them about my booze because I didn't trust them. You know what I mean? So there's no chance. They didn't have a chance of helping me. I would tell them all the things that y'all did to me, and I would never say the fact that I drink every day and I can't stop. You know, so there's no shot in hell for them. They're gonna help me. But this guy, I felt like I could trust him, you know what I mean, forever. And so I saw him, and they heard us back in the little van, and we drove back to rehab, and, you know, and then a guy came into that rehab, and he spoke, and he did the same thing. He was sober like 7 years. He's a young guy, and I was like, what'd I say? I just went up to him and said, I relate it to you, man. I really relate it to you. I feel like AA might work for me. And he goes, I absolutely will if you go do it. I've never seen that guy since, you know. But so that guy died, and I went to a meeting, and I went to a new meeting, and I waited to the end, and I shared. I stuck up my hand, and I said, you mean, I'm Ryan, I'm an alcoholic, I can't stop, I want to drink. My friend died last night, I don't know what to do, I need help. And I've been to enough AA meetings to know that I'm the newcomer, you're supposed to come help me, you know what I mean, like, probably buy me dinner, you know, definitely give me gas money, you know, and stuff like that, you know, or at least pick me up for meetings. And I got out of this meeting, I'm sitting there by the coffee pot, and nobody came up to me. And I always try and go up to people when I hear that kind of stuff. But my higher power knows how to work with me. It's the only thing I can think of. Because there's some girl was sober about 6 months, so I could believe that. You know, 6 months, it's like, wow, how'd you do that? And, you know, 7 years, like, oh, you're lying. You know what I mean? Or you're not an alcoholic of my type, that's for sure. You know, but 6 months, I'm like, wow, you know, that's pretty amazing. And she was attractive, you know, and she came up to me. You know, at first it was like, I didn't think anything inappropriate. I was just thinking, wow, an attractive girl's talking to me. Like I said, it'd been a while. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't happening. So she came up and talked to me, and then my ego knows no bounds. So, of course, you know, 3 minutes in, I'm shaky a little bit. I'm saying weird things still. I'm, you know, I mean, still a little obese from the drinking. And I think, wow, she's in love with me. You know what I mean? AA is awesome. You know, I don't go anywhere. She said, you know, I mean, I have my home group. You should come check it out. And this was her home group. You know, she's, I don't know where she is. You know, she's not so, she may or may not be sober anymore, but I don't know. You know, I have no idea. But she was not in love with me. You know, she was actually dating one of the guys that ended up being one of my best friends. I ended up, like, living it with him, you know. So we were, like, roommates, and she would come over, and, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, over and over again, I'd just reiterate, she wasn't in love with me, you know. So I had that, and I walked into this meeting. The meeting was small. There wasn't that many people. I remember everybody was in that first meeting. And the guy shared, and I hardly remember what he shared, but people stuck their hand out to me after the meeting. They walked up to me, and I tell you what, I've put a lot of times I put my name down on a list and given it to people and said, call me, you know, call me before you drink. I've done that. And people have called me. And I always find that really amazing. Because I had like 15 or 20 of those in my trunk of my car, and I'm not calling any of y'all. And I'm afraid to. And I got to this meeting, and these guys stuck out the hand to me and said, you know what I mean, my name's Todd, my name's Jaime, you know, what's your name? I told them, you know what I mean? And they're like, what's your number? And I'm like, that's, you know, weird, where's the sheet? You know what I mean? Like, give me the sheet. So they didn't give me a sheet. They could care less if I had their number at the time. They got my number. I remember the next day I was working for my dad at the time, and we're driving to lunch together, and my phone rings, and it's one of these guys. He says, "What are you doing tonight?" I said, "I'd like to go to a meeting with you guys." And I told them where I live. They had my address. They came and picked me up. We went to a meeting. I made up some excuse of why I had to go home early. You know, I mean, like, I didn't have anything going on. I had a job that my dad was about to fire me from anyways, and I was living with them, and they were about to kick me out, so I didn't really have any responsibility at the house, or even if I did, I wasn't doing it, that's for sure. And so the next night, they call me again. "What are you doing tonight?" "Well, I've been to two meetings in a row. That's a lot. You know what I mean? I want to take this thing a little easy." And they would say, "Okay, cool, we're out front. You know what I mean? Come on out to the car." And little by little, I just got dragged into this thing. And I got dragged into an active home group that was interested in service, and they were interested in sponsorship. And by interested, I mean, like, that's what they did. You know what I mean? No matter what was going on in their lives, they were at the meeting at 6 helping set up. You know, and they would leave at 9:30 and pick up cigarette butts. And none of them was at their defined, I mean, like, one person was there to find service commitment, but the whole home group was here at, like, 6, you know, and except for somebody that, like, had a job that had to work late or something like that. But anybody else, nobody was, like, coming in late or anything. There's, like, there's 6 or 7 people, and they would just show up, and they would pick each other up, and they were having fun, and they were interested in being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And that was it. That was attractive to me. You know what I mean? They talk about it, you know, I mean, attraction, not promotion. And they promoted it too. You know what I mean? Like, they were telling me all the great things that were going on. "We're going to bid for a conference. We're going to do this. You know what I mean? Our home group's going to get big, and we're going to have lots of fun and parties and blah, blah, blah." It's promotion. And I was like, yeah, I want to do some parties, you know? That sounds great. And all this stuff. But, you know, what they were doing, like, the actions that they were taking spoke way louder than any of the words that they were saying, you know? And they just, you know, they just walked. And I just kind of tried to fall in behind them. And not by any, like, kind of virtue of my own. You know, I didn't want to necessarily do this stuff. I got into the steps because my brother Pigeon was doing a fourth and fifth step. And he's got the same sponsor as me, and he's been sober a couple weeks longer than me. And I didn't want him to get too far ahead in the sponsorship, you know what I mean, number one Pigeon game, you know. Like, I had to make sure that I was, like, pretty highly ranked still. You know, there's two of us, you know what I mean. So I wanted to be at least a close two, you know. And I knew that if I didn't do my fifth step, he would think, "This guy's not a very good Pigeon, you know. No, that's lame. I don't want that, you know." So it's all about image. It's all about looking good. But my first 100 days of sobriety, I thought about drinking all day long, you know, compulsions to drink. Like, if I don't drink any second, I'm going to explode, you know, like 100 days sober. That physical withdrawal was gone for me at that point. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, it's the spiritual, it's the mental that's killing me. You know what I mean? I have nowhere to put that, and my brain's just going nuts. And I'm dreaming about it every night. And I'm dreaming dreams that are like, I wake up in the middle of the night, and I'm standing in my bed, and I'm sweating because I just drank again in my dream. And that's not social drinking, if anybody's wondering. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know any normal people that wake up with dreams like that. I'd never really met anybody that when I say that to a normal person, they're like, "Oh, man, mad at me, too." You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't happen. You know, that's alcoholism. You know what I mean? Alcoholism was invading my dreams. It was invading all of my day. You know, I wanted to drink. And I did that honest fourth and fifth step. And for any newcomers that are here, it just means basically I wrote down every defect of character I had and told somebody. You know, I mean, there's more to it than that. But that was kind of like the gist of it. And I you look at it, and I think any newcomer looks at it and says, those three things, you know, they instantly come up. Those are the three things I'm not going to say. You know, I see, you know, inventory of moral defects. You know what I mean? Like, I know what they are. You know what I mean? There's a bunch of stuff I'll say. I'll say stuff outside the meeting in, like, a macho way. You know what I mean? I say stuff just as a joke to make fun of myself to fit in. You know what I mean? But there's three or four things I'm not going to say. And I wrote them down in pencil at the bottom of my four step. You know what I mean? I had little secrets, like, list I'd put down at the bottom. And they were in pencil, so I could erase them if I decided not to say it. And I got to the end, and he asked me if there was anything else. And I said, "No, that's it." You know, and he asked me again. And I said, "Well, there's one. There's one thing." And I said it. And he, like, related, you know. And I was like, "Well, that was my third deepest secret, you know." And he related. And I was like, "That's pretty amazing." And I told him the other two. And all of a sudden, I had no secrets left. You know, I had no secrets from one person left in the world. You know, he knew everything about me. The deep, dark secret stuff that I did, the robbing money from my mom, you know, my single mom that's trying to work to support me. You know what I mean? That's the stuff that kills me. You know what I mean? The little stuff, the stuff that I wouldn't brag about outside the meeting, you know? And that was the stuff that I did on a regular basis. So I told him this stuff. You know, like I said, I've been to a couple of meetings. I knew, you know, I heard people talk about the fifth step, and something amazing is supposed to happen. You know what I mean? Wait till the miracle happens, they used to say. And I think grandiose. I think God's going to come out, tap me on the shoulder, walk me out to my car, you know what I mean? Like, give me a big screen TV, you know, all kinds of different stuff is, you know what I mean, is my idea of a miracle. And what happened was, is a couple months later, I thought back and said, I haven't had a dream about drinking since that night, you know what I mean? I haven't thought about drinking since that day in the same way. I'm alcoholic, I think about drinking. But that was my experience. And I think that happens to everybody. I don't know. Anybody that honestly works these steps, I think it happens to. It definitely happened to me. It happened to me at the fifth step. I don't know if that'll be your experience, you know. But I know that this 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, you know, that's a promise in itself, you know. And I know anybody that I've known that's done that, that's gotten that far, that's come true in their life, you know. And that's about the only guarantee I have, you know what I mean? Like, that seems to work bar none, you know. And it happens all the time where people don't do it. But, you know, for me, I fell in with these guys. I did my fourth and fifth step, and, you know, I started to run with them, you know. And like I said, the meeting was real small at the time. And then my sponsor moved back to D.C. And my buddy Jaime moved back to D.C. And it's me and a couple other guys. And we're sitting around and we're judging everybody in Tampa, you know, because I'm sober a year and a half now. So I know, you know, I mean, the inner workings of Alcoholics Anonymous and how it should be going. And, you know, so I'm pissed because nobody else agrees with me, you know. And AA is going on about its merry way without me and without my input, you know. And so that's, you know, I was lame. And so I'm complaining to my sponsor one night. And he's just like, why don't you get to work? Do something. And so we did, you know what I mean? Me and these two guys, we just started, we bid for a conference, we started throwing events, we started like really caring about our home group and, you know, started to grow, you know? And for me, it's always been, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think like the speaker matters as much. I don't think that, you know, the look of the home group, the size, I don't think any of that really matters. I think what matters is that everybody gets greeted as they walk in the front door. You know what I mean? I think it's important that there's homemade cookies, you know what I mean? And not just because I like them. You know, like, there's, I mean, that's a service opportunity for somebody to do something. And then people walk in and they see, like, is that? You know what I mean? Like, there's teen lemonade, cookies. You know, there's like greeting line, it's like 12 people. You know, what is that? You know, like, that's just weird to me. But, you know, to me, it's what separates, you know what I mean, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to just being a, you know what I mean, a person that sits here. And you know what I mean, that's threefold for me. It's about being in the steps. It's about being sponsored. It's about service in my recovery. You know what I mean? It's about showing up for the things that I'm not able to do. And for me, it's unaccountable to everything. You know, I'm completely unable to do anything on my own, you know, and so I need y'all. I really need y'all. I can't stay sober without y'all, you know, so I need fellowship in my life. You know, I need that. I need that because I need to see what working the steps does to a newcomer on a consistent basis in my life. You know, I need to see a guy come in that hates AA just like I did. And I mean, I don't know if I hated it. I just felt really out of place, you know, but see people that come in, you know, you know what they look like. They come in, they're pissed. They don't want to be here. You know what I mean? They sit in the back. They, you know, they don't really talk to anybody. And then all of a sudden you greet them and it's like, they don't want to laugh, but somebody says something funny. So they snicker a little bit and they're like, you know what I mean? Got to act cool again. You know, so like, that's how I was, you know what I mean? I didn't want to like let on that I liked being here. You know, I really didn't. So you see those people, and then you see them all of a sudden, they're doing the same thing with a newcomer. I mean, they're sticking out their hands to that newcomer. You mean, they're taking some guy through the steps. You know, that's an amazing thing to watch. I've had a lot of great stuff happen to me personally in my life. You know what I mean? I have an amazing fiance. You know what I mean? Like, I think about my fiance. We're going to get married next year, and I think about her, and she's like my best friend. You know what I mean? And I couldn't be a best friend, unless a fiance. You know what I mean? I'm not good at that stuff. I can't be a big brother. I have a 7-year-old sister that adores me, you know, and I love spending time with her, you know, and that's y'all. You know, every time I see those people, I see you guys, because I couldn't do that without y'all. I couldn't do it without this room, you know, without the service opportunities that I was given in the beginning, about my sponsor taking time out of his day to read the big book with me and make me rice-a-roni or whatever we did to have dinner when we would, you know, I mean, he was broke, so we'd make like rice and jalapeno peppers and like mayonnaise in it, and that's what we eat. It was disgusting. But he was sharing it with me, so I would eat it with him, and it was all he had, so I didn't want to not eat it then, because that's just mean, you know, And of course, I don't have a job. I'm living with my folks. I'm just taking from them. So it's not like I'm any better. But you know what I mean? You guys are the ones that showed me how to do that, you know? And it's hard. You know, it really, like, I love this way of life. You know, I really do. And I let outside things get in the way of it sometimes. You know, I can think to myself, I'm really busy this week. You know, I got, you know what I mean, a test tomorrow, or I got this to do or something like that. And I can think, what if, you know what I mean, maybe I just skip the meeting tonight. You know, maybe it's no big deal. You know, maybe they don't, AA doesn't need me. You know, and that's true. AA doesn't need me. But with thoughts like that, I'll leave. You know what I mean? Like, I will walk straight out the door. And I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know what newcomer will remember something I said to him that nobody else did. And that's not because I say anything like intellectual or moving or spiritual or anything like that. It's just sometimes it's a matter of saying, hey, man, good to see you again, and I remember his name, or, you know what I mean, or I remember her name, you know. And sometimes that's it. You know what I mean? That made me feel great when I would walk up and they would shake my hand and say, Ryan, welcome back, you know, and they would remember me every week. You know, that was amazing to me. And I forget that's part of what this is, you know what I mean, because Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion, is, you know what I mean, it isn't like a, isn't anything greater than sticking out my hand to that guy and sharing the same stuff that was shared to me. You know what I mean? That same passage to a spiritual connection that I have no idea how to get a grip on. You know, that's what it is to me. You know what I mean? The book is, I think, divinely inspired, and that's my opinion, and I don't know anything else about it, but you know, Bill was sober a couple of years when he wrote it. That's pretty amazing. That thing's changed a lot of lives. But that book's a book if I don't read it and put those actions into my life. You know what I mean? Even if I sit at home and I read it every night, I mean, I'm just a smarter drunk, you know, like I know more, I can recite it to you, you know what I mean, I can find the cool pages and say, oh, page 112 says this, you know what I mean, but, you know, that's great but who am I saying it to, you know, if I don't take those things and put them into action in my life and start to walk that way, you know, it doesn't mean anything, you know, it's just a waste, and, you know, so that's what goes on for me, like that's how I try and portray this thing in my life. I like to try and let my actions speak. You know what I mean? I've been a talker, not like a up here talker. Ego would love that, but you know what I mean? But I've been the guy that just sits there and says, you need to do this, you all need to do this, this is what's wrong with everybody else, and I've never thought about, you know what I mean, what's going on with me. You know what I mean? Like, I've never taken inventory and stuff like that, and I've been that guy, and that doesn't mean anything, you know? But if I'm out there greeting and a newcomer comes and stands next to me and greets too, I think that's a pretty amazing thing to see. And, you know, little by little, my life has absolutely changed. Like I said just a couple minutes ago with my little sister, just a short story about this. When I was drinking still, my parents told me they were going to adopt a little girl from China. And I was an only child until I was 21. And I thought to myself, you know, cheers, you know what I mean? Like, I just kept drinking, you know? And I was like, that's cool. I'll be a cool big brother. I'll get her beer, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff. And, you know, and they just, at the time, like, my dad was waking me up at 7 in the morning, calling me names and making me run the treadmill because I was so overweight from the drinking. I was failing out of college again at the time and telling him I was doing fine and I was drinking a liter of whiskey every night I was there. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be a great big brother. You know what I mean? Like, I can't wait to hold this little one-year-old in my arms when I'm stumbling around drunk. And, you know, needless to say, I got sober. I got sober. My parents went over to China and adopted this little girl, and they had to, like, delay it a little bit. So I was, like, a year and a half sober when they got her. They had to delay it due to the SARS outbreak, and so they couldn't go to China, which was a good move. And so they came back from China, and they said, you know, hold your sister, and I'm holding her. And I got the picture of me holding her from that first night still, and it hangs up in my room. And, you know, they said, they looked at me like just all honesty, and they said, you ever start drinking and don't come back. You know, like, not like, oh, you look so great with your sister. It's like, you are horrible when you're drunk, you know. And around this time, they'd stop saying as many things like, when are you going to stop going to those meetings? Instead, they would be like, you're acting a little crazy. You should go to one of those meetings, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous had worked in my life enough to where they believed in it too, you know. And they don't. My dad and my stepmom are not anywhere close to alcoholic. You know, they don't even really want to understand it. They don't really care. But they knew that it worked in my life, and so they told me that. And they said, if anything ever happens to us, you know, I mean, Haley gets cared for by my friends in Chicago, which is like, it's not even family. You know what I mean? Like, I got bumped out for friends in Chicago. You see once a year. You know what I mean? As being the guardian of my little sister, that's messed up. You know, little by little, Alcoholics Anonymous showing up here. You know what I mean? Picking up chairs in my home group, working through the steps with my sponsor, working through the steps with other guys I sponsor. You know, little by little, one night I'm doing dishes at their house, which is new. You know, I don't do that normally. And I'm doing dishes, and they look at me and they say, just in passing. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous and my idea. You know what I mean? They just said in passing, hey, if anything happens to us this weekend, you're guardian of Haley. You know, and that to me is like, that's amazing. And it's not that they said it. I mean, the fact that they said it's pretty cool in my eyes. It might not mean anything to anybody else, but the fact that they said it in passing to me is Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous have worked in my life enough through you all, through what y'all did for me, that my sponsor and the people that stuck out their hands to me, they did enough to me where my parents felt it unnecessary to even worry about it anymore. You know what I mean? That's crazy. That's the miracle. You know what I mean? That's the grandiose I was thinking about when I was a newcomer. You know what I mean? And this stuff, none of this stuff may or may not be your experience. I don't really know. You know what I mean? I know what's happened to me, and I share that with you. You know? And I know for me it's been a matter of sitting quietly in the meeting, cell phone in the car. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a student. I ain't that important. You know what I mean? Like, nobody needs to contact me that much, you know? And like, the small things, like, the little small things that my sponsor found important that he just, you know, gave to me. You know, the little things like, this is what we do here. You know what I mean? We don't we shake hands, we pick up chairs, we don't go to Starbucks right after the meeting. You know what I mean? Like, just little things. And little by little, it just became a conviction to me. You know, it became a conviction in me. I don't go to weird places because I've seen too many people drink doing it, you know? And it's just, you know, my opinion, my conviction. I almost drank doing it myself, you know? And that's kind of where it comes from for me. And little by little, this message that y'all carried, no matter what was going on in your day at the time, no matter what was, you know, I mean, the problems in your life, you know, the things, just the small little things that you did little by little, absolutely changed my life. You know, there's no other way to say it. I don't know anything about it except for the fact is that if I didn't give this back to y'all, I'd be selling it short. You know what I mean? I would drink and die again as far as I'm concerned. I need to continually be here, you know, handing back the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to another newcomer that may help me. So thanks a lot.
I'm Nikki, I'm an alcoholic. This is Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first international conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you'll pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed five of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is and we understand what service is, so let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency, so they're not willing to extend or attempt that help, which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.